You ready? I'll start over again. We found out people listen to this podcast, so we want to get the whole thing. Okay. People actually listen. Go figure. So I'm Wendell. I'm living loved by God and discovering all that that involves. I'm recovering from spiritual and emotional abuse, from addiction to food and work and control, hence control freaks. And I've had issues with pornography, with alcohol, with rage, and with panic, and with depression. So, we're going to be talking about control issues for a while. And can I tell our story, or would you rather me not? About the one where I told you you were a control freak? This was several years ago. This was several years ago. Early on in her recovery, I got into recovery groups a little sooner than she did. And so I was a little bit ahead of understanding how messed up I was. And so I kind of had a handle on my weirdness. No, I just knew I was weird. So I remember one time I came into the house and we were talking and I said, you know, you're a control freak. And she was like, no way. You're the control freak. I said, I know I am. I know I'm a control freak. I said, you are too. No, I'm not. It's because my control issues are aggressive. I'm an aggressive controller. I'm an assertive bull in a china cabinet or china closet type controller. That's my personality. That's the way I do it. I'm a proactive guy. I'm not a passive person. I'm proactive. She's much more passive, but yet she's a control freak, and she introduces herself that way. And so we... so anyway... So we have, it's open season at our house to call each other when our control issues come out. You're doing it again, both ways. You're doing it, Wendell, I feel like you're trying to control me. You got it, I'm trying to control you, I'll back off. Goes both ways. So we understand that, and so we're able to talk about control issues. But I say that, bless her heart, she gets picked on so much. But I say that because a lot of us here tonight are going to say, I get that Wendell is a control freak because I know Wendell, and I know he's aggressive and assertive. I can see him having control issues. I cannot imagine Robbie having control issues. That's true. School teacher. Let's just talk about control, the broad umbrella of control, and then we're going to get specifically into passive-aggressive control. Because that's what she does, passive aggressive. I'm more, if you're being controlled by me, you usually know it. It's like, I want you to do this. So we're going to, so when we talk about having control issues, back up even some more. I think that we've come to the place here in Pathway where we all admit that in some form or fashion, we're all addicts. All of us are addicted to something. And at first, I could tell that was a hard sell. 4 or 5 years ago, even longer, people were like, no, I'm not an addict. You know, by now, I think we all agree, yeah, we're all addicts. We're addicted. We all medicate with something. Shopping, working, religion, keeping the rules, whatever. Substance abuse, food, you name it. We're addicts. And I think we've come to realize that we're all codependent. We all use and abuse each other from time to time so we can feel better about ourselves. That's codependency. When you start talking about control, people are like, no, that's not me. That's my husband. That's my wife. Or that's my aunt. Or that's my... I'm not controlling. I'm the one who is controlled. You know, they control me. I don't control them because I'm not controlling. Newsflash, we're all control freaks. All of us are control freaks. And so now I've got to sell it. I've said it, now I've got to sell it to you. We're all control freaks. All right, so I got my work cut out for me. I realize that. People who have control issues want to control the narrative of their life, the past, the present, and the future, in ways that suit their own purpose. you say such and such happened. Well, I don't want them to think that I meant that by that. You had a conversation with somebody, and you come home and you tell your spouse or somebody, your significant other, or buddy, or whatever you say, I had that conversation. I'm afraid that they think blah, blah, blah. We want to control the way they think about that conversation. There could be something that happened in our distant past that gets out. All of a sudden it comes out. I want to control the way that's received or heard. I want to control people's response when they hear about what happened on, you know, December the whatever, on such and such. I want to control that. So that's trying to control the narrative, the story of the past. I want to control my reputation. I want to control what is told about me. I want to control what is said about me. I want to control how people felt about what happened. I want to control that. And we do it lots of different ways. Or we want to control the present. I want to control the present conversation. I'll either do it with humor. I'll do it with a wall of words. I'll do it. There's all kinds of ways I can control the current, the climate of the room, the conversation, the music in the car, the temperature in the room, whatever. I'm going to control to suit my purposes. I mean, this can go so many different ways. I think it's too hot in here. I really don't think it's too hot in here, but I want you to know that I'm in control. So let's turn the heat up just a little bit. I'm sweating like a pig. I'm way too hot, but I want you to know I'm in control. Does you get what I'm saying? Or it could be I'm actually cold and I want to turn the heat up. Go both ways. Or we want to control the future. This is where worry and fear come in. I want to control that. I want to know. I want to guarantee. I remember when my first wife, Carol, was diagnosed with cancer, and they ran test after test after test after that diagnosis. And I remember demanding of God, begging of God, give me some sort of a guarantee of what's going to happen. Good, bad, or ugly, I want to know because I can't plan. I don't know where this is going. Send me a sticky note with some kind of, and he never did. God never gave me any indication, and I would get my hopes up. No, bad test results. Okay, she's going to die. Then things got a little better. Oh, maybe I could not control the future. And all I wanted was some sort of guarantee of what was going to happen. That's just one part of my story. But that's where fear and worry and anxiety come in, because we want to control the future narrative. I want to control how things turn out. I want to control how people think about me. I want to control my success, level of success, my income, my promotion. You know, I want to make sure I get regular promotions, whatever. So control goes so many different ways. This workbook is going to dig into a lot of what I've already talked about. But what is not in the workbook, and I don't know why I didn't put it in there, but I got to the end of it and I thought, you don't have a single lesson in there about passive-aggressive control. So I want to talk about that tonight, and I'm glad we have a bigger group than normal so that we can have lots of people who can kind of chew on this, and I would invite your dialogue, you know, email me, text me, whatever, and we can open up a dialogue about this. But before we get into all the different aspects I thought of passive-aggressive control, I want to ask this question. And I know in Pathway we don't like the word sin. We don't talk about it. And the reason we don't like the word sin is because it's been used and abused by so many people. It's been misused by so many people. It's been used to evoke shame and fear on us. It's been used as a bullwhip, a cattle prod. It's been used as a controller on us. But you know what? Jesus talked about sin. And I think that it's time for us to redefine what sin is in a healthy way, in the way he defined sin. And so I want to talk about that tonight, just before we get started here. Why are we talking about control? Because it's a sin. That's why. It's not named in the Ten Commandments. It's not talked about specifically by Jesus or by Paul. The reason we're talking about control is because when I try to control you, instantly I am dehumanizing you. I'm making you less than what you are. I think you are stupid enough to fall for my techniques. When I think you're stupid enough to do something like that, I am dehumanizing you. I'm making you less than what God's design is for you. To me, I don't see sin anymore as us breaking one of God's laws. To me, sin is any time I dehumanize anybody at any level, including myself. When I make you less in my mind or verbally or in the minds of anybody else, when I make you less than what God designed you to be, that is sinning against you and God. Dehumanization. I'm seeing that more and more as the root of the sin in our culture. We dehumanize each other in so many ways. And control, when I try to control you, I am dehumanizing you. It may be in small increments. It may be in little bitty subtle ways. But I am thinking they are less than me. They are the pawns on my table, on my chessboard. And I'm going to get them to move where I want them to move. They are no longer my equal. They are lesser than I am. So I'm going to dehumanize them by controlling them. That is sin. That is sin. In the Garden of Eden, what happened was they wanted to be something other than human. Think about that. The darkness came there and said, if you eat this fruit, you can be better. It was a lie. You could be better than a human. God had already said humans are very, very good. Darkness showed up and said, you can be something better than human. And it sounded good, but what darkness was really saying was, I want to dehumanize you. You being human is not what I feel good about. I want to dehumanize you, unhumanize you. He made it sound like I'm going to extra humanize you, but that's not what it was. It was, I'm going to make you less than human. They went for it. And you see what happened instantly. They began dehumanizing each other. Did you eat the fruit? No, it was her. Boom. She's below me. Boom. Cain and Abel. Dehumanizing. You're not worth living. Your life is not worth anything to me. I'm going to take your life. I mean, look at, do you see where I'm going with this now? This was not the breaking of some law. This was the dehumanizing of a person made in God's image. That is the definition of sin, is to dehumanize yourself or anybody else. That's the definition. So when we talk about control, this is not just some interesting topic. It's not some, you know, oh, this is catchy. Now we're talking about control in Pathway. This is an interesting concept. Let's dig into it. No, this is the heart and soul of what it means to sin against each other, what it means to try to dehumanize each other by trying to control each other. So this is pretty big stuff. The deeper I got into this, the more I thought, oh, good grief. I thought this was going to be an interesting dialogue, but no. This is where we live. This is our life. So when we get into this, we're going to start chuckling because we're going to say, oh, that's me, or oh, that's her, or that's him, or whatever. So we're going to get lighter. It's not going to be this heaviest the way we started out. So let's see. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. There's 12 things here that I wrote down that are techniques for passive aggression. Do you get the two words together? I'm going to be controlling of you, but I'm going to do it in a very passive way. I'm going to do it with camouflage on. I'm going to do it in stealth mode. I'm going to control you, but you're not knowing. You're, watch this one, watch this. You know, you're getting them to watch this one. You're sucker punching them with this one. So it's passive control is passive aggression is very subtle, sneaky, you know, attempts to control. So I'm just going to list them, and we're going to just kind of give some examples. If you can think of a good example, just holler it out. I don't care. So first one I put down is just coldness. You know, it's in a relationship, especially a marital relationship or a close relationship, you just kind of get cold. The only thing you're going to get out of me is information. That's all you're going to get. I'm not going to tell you how I feel about it. You're not worth it. I'm just going to give you the information you need to function, but that's all. That's all. So just coldness. It can be in your tone of voice. It can be in your facial expression. It can be all kind of ways. But yeah, I'll give you information. I'll talk to you. Sure I will. I'll talk to you. But I'm just going to give you information. And if you're close to somebody, you can pick that up in a half a sentence. Boom. Oh boy. The room's different than it was when I left. You know? So there's one, coldness. The other one is just a step deeper than that, just plain old silence. I'm not going to talk to you. I'm just not going to talk to you. I think about some of the issues that we faced in our marriage early on, that we still face some. It's so cool to be in recovery together. There were times when we would have an issue between the two of us, and we might go a day or two, and all that we would give each other was a grunt. That's only when you had to, you know. I mean, you got to get kids ready for school, and you got to function as a household. You know, what do you want to eat? Okay, we'll have some for supper. We'd go maybe a couple days. It usually didn't last much longer than that. And now we'll have the same issue between us, and like a minute later, what was that? You know, everything. You know. So recovery has helped us so much. But you remember those silent times. You ever been there, done that? I mean, you know, we understand what that is. Because it gives you a certain, you can control the narrative. Guess what? There is no narrative. I'm controlling it. You know, go ahead and try to get me to talk. I'm not going to. I'm controlling the narrative right now. You know, and to think about ignoring somebody, we laugh. I knew we would. But the bottom line is we're dehumanizing them. Like you ignore a barking dog, you know. Suddenly they're less than human. We just give them the silent treatment. You take it even a step further. There's not just silence, but there's absence. I'm here physically with you, but I'm not here. I'm everywhere else but here. You know, we started out, I'm just going to give you the facts, but I'm not going to give you any feeling, any emotion, just information. That's it. Then we go to just silence. I'm in the room with you, and I'm kind of a warm body here with you. I'm willing to be with you in a way. And in a moment of a crisis, boy, I'm right here. But then there's this thing of being absent, which can be literally absent, or it can be I'm here, but I'm not here. And I want to give you indications that I'm physically here under protest. I'm here because this is my address. I'm here because this is where I live. I don't want to be here with you. I abhor being here with you right now. Think of the messages that sends. I'm physically present. In every other way, I am absent. Intentionally. And I hope you know that. Controlling. Then we have withholding. In a married situation, you withhold sex, you withhold affection, you withhold hugs, you withhold, I love you, honey. Silence. Crickets. You know? No, I'm not going to tell you back. I know that's what you want to hear worse than anything. Not today. You're not going to hear it. You know? Withholding that which is normally given, withholding courtesy, withholding affection, withholding attention, withholding all kinds of things. We're not angry. We don't have our fists balled up. We're not throwing anything, you know, but we're being every bit as controlling as if we were being a bully. We're still being controlling. So all of those, coldness, silence, absence, withholding, those are like passive, passive, passive aggressive. They're like pretty easy to pull off because you don't have to do anything. Then there's the more active passive aggression. There's sarcasm. We give an answer, but we make sure it's got a barb in it. And we know what buttons to push in that person, and so we push those buttons with what we say. Yeah, I'll talk to you. Yeah, I'll give you some emotion. You want some emotion? I'll give you some emotion. Yeah, boy. I'm waiting to give you some emotion, Barb. Because, and the more you think about this, the more somebody trusts you, the more they tell you about themselves, it gives you a plethora of buttons to push. The more you know them, the more buttons you have to push. And so you can weaponize with sarcasm, and you can, you know, barb, 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 so your tongue becomes a whip. Your tongue, and it has little razors on the end. And you can't take back what you said. But the cool thing with sarcasm is if they directly quoted it back to you, you could say, those words were harmless. Word for word, they were harmless. But the way you said them was not. So it's not literally the words that were said, it's how they were said. So sarcasm. Yeah. I'm not going to call you a dog. I'm just going to insinuate that you're one. That's all. There's facial expressions. I mean, we can say so much with our face. You know, I'm not hitting you. I'm not using the ball bat on you. But boy, my face, I can make all kind of expressions. Sure do love you, honey. You know, we can make all kinds of a strange smile. What does it say when somebody's telling you something and they won't look at you? You know, they're talking to you, but they won't look at you. I'm not going to give you the respect of looking you in the eye when I talk to you. I'm going to look somewhere else. You know, I'm going to dehumanize you. It may just be a little bit, but I'm going to let you know that I'm not going to look you in the eye to say this. The set of your jaw. I mean, there's so many different ways. The older you get, and if you're in a helping profession like I'm in, I guess if you were a nurse or a doctor, any kind of thing where you deal with people and you're trying to help people, you begin to learn to read their tells. Do you know what I'm talking about? That's a gambling term where you can read their tells and you can start to read their facial expressions. You can start to tell, oh, they're trying to manipulate me here. They're trying to control me. But they don't have a club or a whip. They're not being aggressive. They're doing it in a very passive way. But they've got an agenda here. And you can see it in facial expressions. There's bargaining. Bargaining is like an eye for an eye, a tooth for tooth. Scorekeeping. Okay, that hit home. So you say bargaining is like, what are you talking about? I'm talking about scorekeeping. You know, where you keep a record, and it's like you're, what do they call the justice scales? What is that lady called something? Lady of Justice, whatever. You become that person. Lady Bird? But you kind of become the judge and jury in the home or in the relationship, and so you're keeping score. And I never was good at that, so I always lost at that. And I would be like, really? Robbie's not bad about that at all, but some people are, about keeping score. And they're like, you remember the time you said, and I thought, oh, shoot, I forgot all about that. And then the time you did, I forgot all about that. But to them, they're keeping score, and they're not coming at you with a club or a whip, but they're keeping score to say, do you realize how much I've got on you? Do you realize that? I got a lot on you, you know? And I'm just telling you some of the surface stuff. You really want me to get going, I you know? So it's like I've got these bargaining chips, and I can play any one of them I want any time I want unless you do what I want you to do. So we have these bargaining chips, or we have these scores that we keep. I've talked about this one before. We're getting down on the list, by the way. I don't want you to go to sleep on me. Fishing and crowing. Remember those terms we used? Fishing and crowing. That didn't leave much of an impression, did it? It was about 3 months ago. Maybe longer than that. But fishing is, oh, man, I just, do you know that one? Oh, yeah. Well, okay, no, that's another one. The way I'm talking about fishing is, oh, man, I'm just no good. I just can't get this right. You know, I'm a loser.
No, you're fine.
Oh, thank you. I got someone to bite on it. I got someone to bite on it. So we'll fish with little subtle things of I'm no good, I'm less than, I'm not pretty, I'm not smart, I'm not blah, blah, blah. And somebody in the room is going to bite on that hook. You know? So what have we done? We've controlled the narrative. We've controlled the narrative. We laugh at that, but that really is dehumanizing. It's dehumanizing in that I am going to use you so I can feel better about myself. You're going to be my pet complimenter. I got a pet dog and a pet cat. You're going to be my pet complimenter. Can I take you home with me? Because I know that if I throw out a little fish hook, I'm no good, I'm not pretty, whatever. You're going to give me what I need. Thank you so much. You know, crowing is just the other way. Crowing is you get up on a stump and I did this, I did that, I did this, I did that. Boy, you're good. I know I'm good. I did this and I did that. I studied this. I accomplished that. I got this reward. I had an uncle. You never knew Uncle Philip very well. Oh, did you? Okay. I didn't know. Uncle Philip is funny. He was the shortest of the three brothers. It was Dad and John and Uncle Philip. And Uncle Philip was just, I loved Uncle Philip. He was so cool. He was so cool. But he had this weirdest way of bragging. He would say, it's the funniest thing how I won that race. He would always start out that way. It's just the funniest thing how I, and then your hook was like, well, tell me about the race, Uncle Philip. Well, it started out this way. But he would start it with, it's the funniest way how I did so well at this. You know? And I thought, this is the most unique way of crowing I've ever heard. It's the funniest thing. It's the funniest thing. So there's fishing and crowing. All right, so we'll get serious again. So there's busyness and preoccupation. You ever get home and enter into a relationship and all of a sudden you realize, they ain't got time for me. They are busy, busy, busy. And what they are doing right now seems unbelievably important. So I kind of see where I stand here. I kind of see where I fit into this mix. It, you know, you can go with texting, with Facebooking, whatever. You know, they usually get right back with me. They're not getting back. Or you get the short, curt answer that says, you know, I've got this, got that, got blah, blah, blah. And after a while, you start to see a pattern. This person hasn't got time for me. This person has way more important things to do than mess with me. And so after a while, they have jockeyed themselves into a position of superiority by busyness and preoccupation. Does that make sense? And you become the peon. You become dehumanized. You become a notch or two below because you're not nearly as busy. You're not nearly as preoccupied. You just want to talk. You want some sort of relational, emotional connection. They ain't got time for that. So they kind of put you in your place, air quotes around that. They put you in your place with their busyness and their preoccupation. There again, it's dehumanizing. It's made you less than what you are. Mood shifts. And you know what you think? Okay, wives do that to their husbands all the time. It goes both ways. Men can be just as moody as women. Women do not have a corner on the market of moodiness at all. No way. No way. And the longer you're married, the more both spouses can read the other one's mood. Men, swallow hard. You're not a robot. As much as you try to be one, you are not a stoical robot. You can't be. You're human. But we can really control people with our moods because we know. Have you tried it, Navi? You got that one down, huh? But you think about how you can control a room with your mood. You really can. If, especially in a family situation, you can control a room, you can control a whole family with your mood, and not just mama, daddy too, you know. It goes both ways. And you can learn how to parlay that into pretty significant control. You can learn. You can't control your moods. Anybody who says they can is crazy. A mood will hit you out of the blue. You can be 1 minute you're great, and the next minute, boom. That's part of being human. But to take that and use it to control other people is demonizing to yourself and to them. But we do it. We use moods. Tone of voice. Okay, so here's one. And I didn't know about this till about a year ago. I think I heard it on NPR. Do y'all know about upspeak and downspeak? Do you know what that is? It was brand new to me, and I thought, oh, wow, this opens up so much. So you get to the end of your sentence, and you think, let's go downtown and see a movie? Yeah? And then we got in a car, and we went over there, you know? And I ate those cherries, and they were so sweet. Woot, woot. Upspeak at the end of the sentence. And it indicates happiness. It makes you feel happy. Or if you got something that's really serious and they do that, it's like, you're not taking me serious. I mean, we think it sounds happy, but in some places it's very inappropriate, and it can be used to diminish the seriousness of what I'm trying to say. But you can hear at the end of the sentence, it goes rip like that. Or sometimes that's a form of cutting the conversation short. That's the end of it. It's the end of it. We're not going to talk anymore about this. The other thing is downspeak, where we get to the end of a sentence and it goes down. And then we had this talk and it went this way. And it falls off. You know, I'm not happy and I don't want you to be happy either. Down. Control it. Never thought of that, did you? I never did. When I heard it on NPR, I thought, oh, shoot, I do that. Other people I know do that. It's upspeak and downspeak at the end of a sentence. Start listening for that. You'll be amazed at where it comes. And sometimes upspeak is happy, and sometimes it's controlling, and sometimes it's disrespectful. It could be, and downspeak can have a variety of uses as well. So just start listening for that. But we're kind of laughing about it because it's kind of funny. But your heart is absolutely broken over something. You've lost a loved one, or you've been devastated by something, and you're in a conversation with somebody, and they start upspeak or they start downspeak. You're talking like this, it's fun. In that situation, it hurts. It hurts, and they've controlled you with that. So it's trivial and fun. Oh, we heard it on NPR, an interesting thing. You know, it's fun to talk about here, but in your most needful moment, and somebody starts that, or in their needful moment, and you start that, it's dehumanizing. It's not just a fun concept anymore. It's dehumanizing. It's very real. The last one I thought up, we're on the very last one. What time is it? My gracious, I'm long-winded. I just wanted to control the room. huge way that people can passively, aggressively control each other is through hyper kindness and hyper generosity. This is such a common passive aggressive way. I'm going to put you in my debt. I'm going to be so nice to you, so attentive to you, so generous with you. You're going to owe me. When the time comes to call in a favor, you have no choice. You have to give me what I want because I've been so nice and so kind and so giving and so attentive. That is not bashing kindness and generosity at all. But when it has that barb in it, when it has that little trick at the end of it, okay, that is dehumanizing. Think about what it does to a person when you are kind, you're complimentary, you're generous with them, and 2 days later you cash in on that and they realize, I see what this was about. Think of how dehumanizing that is. I'm just a pawn again. I'm just a pawn on their chessboard. I'm just being used by them so they can get what they want. of all the things we could say about Jesus, I mean, and there's so many things you could say about him, he never one time disrespected, devalued, or dehumanized another human being. He would not do that. And of all the people who had every right to do that, he could have. But he didn't. He always showed the utmost of respect and value to everybody he dealt with, whether it was a beggar, a hooker, a Pharisee, a king, a priest, doesn't matter. Whoever he dealt with, he showed them the utmost respect. And I think for us to get, I'm not trying to lay a guilt trip on anybody, but for us to know what we know after this lesson and after talking about control, and to go out into life and say, I don't really care. I'm just going to do what I want to get what I want to get. I think we need to realize how grieving that is to God. To say, I did not put you here to dehumanize each other. I put you here to encourage and enhance and help each other. That's why I put you here. So that's why, and we've had fun with this tonight. But that's why getting into this control series, I think, wow, I want to get this. I personally want to get this because I know my tendencies to control. I don't want to go there, don't want to do that. And so my wife has open season on me anytime to say, Wendell, your control issues, I see them. I literally say to all of you, if you catch me being controlling, call me on it. Call me on it, please. As my brothers and sisters in recovery, call me on it and say, dude, you're doing it. Whether it's passive aggressive or being a strong arm, either way, man, I just don't want to be that person. And the looks on everybody's face is like, no, we don't want to be that person either. So let's help each other without controlling each other. How do we do that? I don't know. Harold, it's all yours, bud.